Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, I bet you still have a couple of wine questions, don't you?
I do. I think it would be great to talk about building a cellar. Tell us how to go about doing that. What are the choices?
I mean, obviously, it depends if you have a cellar or not. So, if you don't have a cellar, go and get one of the little winekeeping cabinets at a home improvement store. You're talking about $100, $200 to have things. That if you have something that you intend to keep for at least a year, or something that you want to protect from temperature variations. And we live in an area where you can have temperature variations to 30 degrees in a day. That's going to kill what's alive in a bottle of something that's worthwhile.
And do those have humidity controls as well, or is it just temperature controls?
It's temperature control, but the humidity control is enough that it's you're not going to dry out corks. The humidity thing in cellar conditions, you want a cellar that's about 55 degrees and usually about 65-70% humidity. That's your ideal. Once you get past 80% humidity, all the labels rot, and you grow all kinds of mold in the cellar. But the seal is great on the corks. If you have too dry conditions, meaning like 25% and less, you're going to actually start to dry out corks and break the seal and actually advance age stuff, regardless of temperature. If it's too cold, meaning it's 45 degrees and lower, you begin to change what happens with some of the tartaric acids in the wine, and you get all kinds of weird precipitates and. No one wants to use
and
the word
precipitate. And what happens if it's too hot?
If it's too hot, you'll just cook it. You'll age it too quickly. And if the temperature variations are strong, you'll age it too quickly. So the biggest thing you want, if you have temperature change in your cellar, like if you have one of these old houses with the great big thick walls, and you can just moderate the temperature changes. I mean, if it's going to range through the year from 48 degrees to 62 degrees in your cellar, and that's very doable, and it's not going to damage any of the wine that's in the cellar.
Okay, that's good.
But as long as the temperature change is gradual, if it changes all of a sudden, in a 48-hour period or something, and it's going to drop or rise 10 or 15 degrees, you have an issue.
And what about movement? Does that could have an effect?
Well, the two other things that can have effect are light and movement. If you have lighting in your cellar, turn them off when you're not in there.
Definitely.
Or have relatively soft lighting. Light also creates heat, and you'll have like hot. It may be cool in some areas, but you'll have hot spots too.
Exactly.
And the warmer part of your cellar is higher. So,
okay.
If you have things that are relatively delicate, for goodness sake, like don't store champagne up high near lights in your cellar if it's packed or something like that.
What about if you have construction going on in your house? Do you think that's enough movement to bother the wine or not?
If you have jackhammering, of course it's going to bother it.
Right.
So I don't recommend jackhammering in your wine cellar.
I understand that. What about storage cabinets? What do you, if you're not going to, if you're going to build, if you're not going to buy this?
It's funny. It's one of those things that, like, on a personal level, I've built fancy-looking storage cabinets, and now I just have pine shelves that are, like, heavy-duty that I store cases on. And after a while, it really depends on what you want. If you want some kind of a showroom or not, what I always want is lots of capacity and easy access.
Yeah, I agree.
And easy mobility on the shelves.
That's what's so great about, the X bins, and you can load in a whole case in one bin. You can keep it organized. You know what's happening.
The one thing about a cellar, it's funny. When people ask, well, what do you buy or how do you grow a cellar or something like that, I always tell people it's 8-3-1 when you buy wine. If you're buying a case, 8 of the bottles probably are something you're going to consume pretty quickly. 3 of the bottles are something that's like, you know what? It's a weekend. I want to treat myself. This is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 is something that you really want to keep, that you want to keep for a significant amount of time. Usually, if you want to keep a cellar, that's about, because you're probably going to want something with your food most days. You're going to want something that's for special occasions relatively soon. But it's also nice to at least sock a few things away.
Absolutely.
And if you buy a case of wine a week, for 50 weeks, you have 48 bottles or 50 bottles of something special, that you've got aging for whatever occasion in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, something like that. They might become super interesting over time. If some of the 3s happen to sort of like catch a couple of years, that's great. And once in a while, one of those 8s, one of the things you buy for just normal consumption, it'll sneak through a couple of years, and it's really interesting what happens with the changes. But I think that having some kind of a system where you actually and having some level of focus on, like, if Rioja is what's interesting to you, try to make sure that you consistently buy some Rioja, so you build some level of collection. Because part of the joy of having a cellar is having more than one thing open at a time to share and compare and to contrast and to see how they're changing with time or how they change with different dishes or
the
pleasure of it is the sharing of it and mm-hmm. the discussion of it. So mm-hmm. I'm not sitting here saying you need to drink two bottles of wine right now.
Right. One of the cool things about both of our houses is we both have galvanized sinks in our basement.
Yeah.
And how do you use yours?
Well, yeah, that's, I always sort of joke about it. It's sink wine stuff for those things for drinking any time. I just put them in those big heavy sinks.
Yeah, because no one's washing in them anymore. No. I have a 3-compartment one. Is yours 2 compartments
it's
or 3? Yeah, I mean, it's a great place. That was a good idea. And it's cold. It keeps a nice temperature
in
there.
It's always the coolest thing in the cellar.
Yeah, so if you have something like that down there. I also have an old claw-footed tub, and you know, I've thought about even putting stuff in there just to... But I didn't spend very much money making my cellar either, and it's as simple as it could be, but it's so functional. And, I mean, it's all right in front of me. It's a straight line, and it's X-bins and some end cabinets where I have magnums and things, and it works out really well. So I guess, you know, anybody can do it.
Ooh, you mentioned magnums. Magnums age slower than larger size bottles age slower than regular bottles. I think we have a couple of minutes of. You have a few listener questions.
Mm-hmm. Someone was asking about decanting and that process, and what can you tell them about that?
Briefly, simply, decanting is to do one of two things: to either aerate wine. That's young or seems tight right away, meaning to have it interact with the oxygen by pouring it into a container, a clean decanter. The other reason is to pour clear wine off of sediment, a deposit that naturally occurs in the bottle. The biggest thing with decanting is to have, if you always have things stored label up, then there's going to be the spine, the back opposite the label is going to be a spine of whatever that deposit is. It makes it very easy to gently pour the clear wine off of that deposit into the decanter.
And someone also mentioned they got a wine aerator over the holidays, and asking if they work.
I do not know. I do know that decanting the wine correctly always works.
There you go. Okay. And what about, you know, what we use at the restaurant to pull the air out of the bottle? What are those called? I always forget.
There are so many different devices.
Do you suggest those at home or?
The more importantly than getting the air in or out of the bottle is the keeping condition. For example, even if it's a bottle of red wine and you want to drink half of it tonight and half of it tomorrow, put the second half in the refrigerator, drop that mm-hmm. temperature way down. Mm-hmm. It slows down the growth of the vinegar that naturally is in that wine that starts to grow with the oxygen. It slows the growth down enormously. And then just bring it out 20-30 minutes before you want to serve it, and you'll be fine.
Perfect.
And for our producer segment today, we have Joe Daugherty from, I don't know what you call your company, Joe. I just know your name and your phone number, and you send us
Joe
beautiful
Daugherty
mushrooms.
Specialty mushrooms.
Okay, there you go.
Just left it at that. We were going to change it, but all the chefs know me as Joe, so.
So why change
just
it?
Leave it there. It's easy.
There you go.
So how in the world did you become a mushroom forager? Because, I mean, you don't go to college for mushroom foraging, right?
Oh, no. I began mushroom foraging when I basically could walk. I would go out picking with my family because we all ate the morels, you know, and I started picking. I got pictures when I was, like, 2 years old.
Wow. That's really...
So, you know, it's a big thing in Oregon, you know, the morels. You eat them and just began picking mushrooms when we'd go wood cutting or go to the forest because we spent a lot of time in the woods.
And where did you grow up in Oregon?
I grew up in a little town called Klamath Falls, Oregon. It's in southern Oregon. It's about 12 miles from the California border by Crater Lake, if you're familiar
okay.
with that.
Sure.
And so what year did you start foraging mushrooms full-time?
I started foraging full-time, you know, in high school. I actually, it was kind of funny, I would go pick in my senior year. I was trading off my teacher mushrooms so I could get out of class.
Oh, gosh.
I've never heard that particular bribe before. I think that's very creative, Joe.
Yeah,
because see, I went into when I say business, I was selling to a customer in San Francisco. I worked with him since I was 12 years old.
So why don't you tell everyone what kind of mushrooms you can find around you?
Around us, starting in the spring morales, that's the big mushroom, fresh morales. We mm-hmm. start looking in April, and then we go to porcini.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, my favorite. We pick the porcinis, and then we go to matzo takis. That's
right.
The big money crop here in Oregon, the matsutake, because 90% of those mushrooms go to Japan.
Yeah, that is the prized. Matsutakes are the prized mushrooms. I have a very talented Japanese amateur chef who lives next door to me who is always after matsutakes.
Yeah, that's our big mushroom. You get thousands of pickers, circuit pickers that come here to pick those.
So
you know, I got to pick when the money was really good, when people were actually getting shot over them.
Good Lord.
Wow.
Do you have to be armed when you go out to forage?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, do you have to kind of protect the area where you go? Is that something that's a bit of a secret, or is that something that you share?
You know, the newspaper likes to hype it up. We always pack guns, and it's not so much people, but, you know, sometimes animals, usually 99% no, but it's smart to pack a weapon.
Okay.
You know, but you hear in the paper shoot-offs, and that's the newspaper hyping it up.
It sounds like the Wild West going on out
well,
there, Joe.
Well, that sounds the way newspapers are everywhere.
Right.
And so after matsutakes, what happens to your season?
And then after matsutakes, we do fall porcini on the Oregon coast.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we have chanterelles going, and those, you know, start clearing Washington and then work down, you know, Oregon, California. And then we have the cauliflowers, the real exotics, the fried chicken to white chanterelles, and then we start with hedgehogs. You know, normally I like to move into those in December. And then yellow feet, black trumpets, and then, of course, anything that comes out of Italy or, you know, truffles. We get truffles here, too.
What kind of truffles are you? The Oregon blacks. A little bit like Umbrian truffles?
Not even close. The Oregon blacks equivalent to the Italian summer black truffles.
Okay. So more of the caramel.
Yeah, they're a nice product, but they're overpriced once again because it's a truffle, but nothing like a Italian truffle, no.
What kind of trees would they be growing in out there, the truffles?
Oh, the truffles? The truffles here, they like the Douglas fir.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's
the Doug firs.
Selfishly, the hedgehogs we've been getting from you have been just spectacular right now. Is it something that makes a particularly good season for a particular kind of mushroom?
You know, what makes a good season, of course, is rain for the hedgehog, and you got to have, you know, the weather set up. You know, you want rain, and then the hedgehogs like cold weather, so you want to have some freezes. Because this mushroom can stand the freeze and the cold. Where a porcini, everybody says rain, you want, my opinion, dry weather. Because it keeps the worms out of the porcini. You want it dry outside.
Yeah, no question. That's a big difference in quality.
I know my porcinis. I spent actually a whole summer, that's all I did was pick, and I mean, I've got spots I can tell you when it's producing, and you know, hell, I picked it on the day I was getting married that morning.
That's a serious mushroom forager there.
Oh yeah, we're diehards here.
You are. That's awesome.
So I got two last questions for you, Joe. What is your favorite all-time mushroom dish, and what is your favorite wine with a mushroom dish?
As far as my favorite mushroom dish, I had at a restaurant in Denver, Barolo Grill. I had some cream chanterelle soup, and I'm not a big mushroom eater. It was not bad, though.
You know, I'm not a big. You shouldn't ever tell anyone you're not a big mushroom eater.
Well,
because
it's just because I work with them. I like the black trumpets because those are actually not too bad.
That's interesting.
Favorite wine? I'm not a big wine drinker, but we get some wine because we'd trade the winemakers there in Walla Walla, if you're familiar with their wine.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We'd usually go in around 11:30, and they'd be pretty tipsy. We'd trade them a box of Chanterelles, and they'd give us, like, two bottles of wine.
Okay. I think you could work a little harder. You have pretty beautiful mushrooms. I think you can at least get three or four out of some of the better growers.
Hmm. Yeah, we work very hard. Well, our products, you know, when we get it, of course I forage, but also we buy too from the pickers, and you know, we are their paycheck, so they're out every day picking. And you know, I'm known to pay a high price, but also, you know, we buy quality. I mean, I supply you guys to, you know, when Charlie Trotter was around, I was working direct with him and Matthias.
Mm-hmm. Well, we appreciate very much what you do, and really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, your mushrooms are beautiful.
And you may not love to eat them like crazy, but it seems like this time of the year especially, all I want to do is eat mushroom dishes.
Yeah, oh, I eat the trumpets and stuff. Just if it was up to my wife, she'd be taking them. And when she's taking truffles, that gets expensive.
that's what happens.
Oh, well, yes.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, thank you, Joe. Well,
thank you.
Great to talk with you.
Have a good day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. We had a great time talking about cookbooks. It's one of my favorite things in the world, and I have a lot of them. And
you have a mountain of
you
cookbooks.
Should too. It's it's how you teach yourself how to cook, so it's a great opportunity, and there's so many to explore. So hopefully you will find something that we talked about today that you would enjoy. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram at Chef Wolf, and love to interact with people. And I post a lot of photographs, and particularly at this time, photographs on the renovation of my home kitchen.
And if you want to send us listener questions, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. That's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks again for listening to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. Thank you.